Okay. Well, thank you for sharing that with us. It's quite important, and I know a lot of general aviation pilots out here. You fly solo sometimes, and sometimes you have someone with you. And I think the resource management that you, even though you're flying with someone who does not know anything about flying and you're taking them for a ride, there's certain protocols I'm sure that you all use to help you in case of an emergency. So I think safety is paramount. It's top on the list, and the priority is one. Now, for the crew resource management for the military, how is that training in the military, you know, in your Air Force? How do they train you, the commander's point of view, on how you handle your crew, how you work together? Is that part of that?
We've adopted the airline model. Basically, we definitely all train together during quarterly sims, and we'll have an unscripted emergency simulator and work together as a team to solve the problem and safely land. So it's very similar to what the airlines do. Our difference, I guess, mainly is rank, and kind of like Autumn alluded to, we are in the aircrew world very family oriented. We treat each other as brother and sister on the airplane, and really work together well in that regards, and kind of drop rank at the door, if you will, although the aircraft commander is the final authority, just as the captain is.
Right. So every input that your crew members make is a vital part of decision making as a commander. So their input is just as important as what you're thinking and what you're trying to accomplish, and getting the mission done, and for getting your flight safely to the next destination. So now I know who's been an instructor pilot. I know all of you. Great. So let's talk about that. You said you were instructing your husband, correct? One flight.
Well, right. It was a cross-country flight, and he couldn't find an instructor.
Okay.
This is what he said.
Okay, so you had other students before to fly with. Mm-hmm. What was the challenge of being a female instructor to a male student pilot? Was there any challenge for you?
You know, whenever I got my wings in the Navy has a real different program than the Air Force, and so when you get your wings, if you have a certain grade point average and the skipper requests you, then you can go back and be a CIRCRAD. And it's a really good deal in the Navy because you get a couple years of extra flight time, and then the skipper goes to bat for you for aircraft. And you don't have to take whatever's available that week. You can wait a week, a month, or whatever.
Oh,
so
nice.
It was a privilege to go back. And my T2 skipper, Fred Grant, Captain Grant, one of my mentors, and so when I stepped into his squadron, it was a dream. But it was leadership that made it that way. Leadership sets the pace in everything, not only the standard of excellence, but the whole attitude about getting there. So initially, it was great. And then we had a change of command, and it was not great.
Okay.
And, you know, but there again, I have to say, sometimes I look back, and the benefit of age is you get to look back a long way. And I look back, and so many of those no, 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 or no, not yet, turned into be so good for me. When we got a new skipper, he was very anti-women, and I was the only one in the squadron. And so it was easy to target that sentiment. And so at 1 year point, you get to have an advanced qual. So you quit intercepting radials and teaching landings, and you start teaching gunnery pattern, which is really dynamic and totally fun. They come in, they do it twice a day, and the gang that teaches it, they're laughing and cracking up, and it's just heaven waiting. And when I got there, they said, no, you're a girl, you can't do it. And so I went in the next week hoping he'd had a better breakfast or something. I said, I'm ready for my advanced qual, and I've got room on the schedule. I worked with, and he said, no, you're a girl, and you don't need to do gunnery pattern. So that's that. Don't ask again. And so I went in the next week thinking something might have changed. And he said, you know what? You want an advanced qual? You can do OCF. And so out of control flight is not anyone's dream job. And the students would get there already swallowing and turning green. And I would just say, did you eat anything? Nope. Did you talk to your friends about this flight? Yep. And I said, quit talking to your buds. And so for a year, I taught my advanced qual was out of control flight. So I went up and did stalls and rudder triplets and spins and things like that. But honestly, all that out of control flight time certainly has served me well.
Very good. So when you were teaching your students, were they very attentive to how you were teaching them, techniques you were teaching them? Or?
You know, they were. When you hold the grading pin, it's powerful.
Okay.
And so even though they may not have felt like that, I don't know, I really never got any pushback as an instructor other than, from my skipper saying you can't have these quals or something like that. But the students themselves, great.
So they were comfortable with being taught by a female instructor pilot.
Well, they kept it to themselves if they weren't.
Okay.
So okay. I didn't have any problems there.
Okay, great. And who else? Oh, you're Jessica, you're an instructor, right?
Yeah, so I think, as Jill pointed out earlier, in the military family that we have, you kind of have an idea of who you're working with when you have somebody who's been in, if they're going to PCO and they're coming in trying to learn how to be an aircraft commander and kind of trying to mentor them in that aspect. I think the interesting part comes when you get a new student. You kind of don't know what their quirks are and what makes them tick. So that's the fun part of being an instructor, and then kind of trying to step back and see how far they'll go and let them learn from their mistakes without getting out of your comfort zone. Mm-hmm. I think that's the most challenging part about being an instructor. So I try to do like the hands-off approach and let them get to a point where then I'm like, okay, I got it. You guys, here we go. Let's back off a little bit, just so they can learn from their mistakes. While you guys were talking, you kind of made me think about something I had. At one of my deployments, I had a gentleman that I was a captain at the time, and he had just come over to the KC-10, and I was an instructor, and he was just an aircraft commander. He was getting ready to go to instructor upgrade, and he had not been out to the desert where we had gone, where we go in the KC-10, and I think this was my fifth deployment in the 10, so they made me the aircraft commander, and he was really thinking he was going out as the aircraft commander, and so he was not happy that a captain was going to be the aircraft commander because he was a major, and he's an older guy, and he's a good pilot. He just hadn't been out there yet to see how we do things and know the operations and the spins and all that kind of stuff. So the squadron designated me as the aircraft commander when we went out there. And this tension started to build, where our deployments are 60 days. This tension started to build over the time that we were there. And I didn't know what was going on with him. And finally, we got to a point where we had a CRM breakdown in the airplane. We kind of just said, time out. Let's land this airplane, go home, sleep, and let's talk about this tomorrow. And so I got out of him finally that he was thinking that the squadron thought he was a bad pilot, and that's why they made him the co-pilot and me the aircraft commander. I said, that's not the case at all. I wish you would have talked to me about this 30 days ago, because you've been carrying that burden for 30 days. And if you wanted to be the aircraft commander after 10 flights or so, I'd have been happy to let you have it. I don't want it. It's more work for me. You can take it. So I think the big thing with being an instructor, what I learned from that experience was communication is key. Whether you're flying, whether you're sitting across the table from them, the perceptions that they have of you when you're someone who, as you said, holds the pen, it sets this, not divide, but this line where they kind of feel like they have to walk on eggshells. And if you just communicate to them and let them feel comfortable, I think they learn a lot more. And that's kind of what I've learned from being an instructor.
Okay, very good. Jill, any experiences?
Not really. I definitely echo what has already been said. I grew up in the same squadron, and so I knew everybody. As by the time I upgraded to instructor pilot, everybody knew me, and I just don't think that there was any particular interesting moments as far as that went. Yeah, so it's been a great experience and enjoyed
very
it.
Very good, very good. And Heather, you said you were an instructor.
Yeah. echoing what everyone else has said. And, but for me, though, I think I get so excited and so passionate about the material and about the flying and mm-hmm. and about teaching that it's to me that's real. The joy of instructing is helping someone else elevate their game and learn something new and get to that upgrade and get to that qualification, get to that solo, get to that private pilot certificate. For me, it's really all about investing in the student.
And I guess you transmit that to them, and they're very receptive of that joy and that passion that you have for flying.
Or I'm just so excited, I'm tone deaf to whatever they're thinking.
Right. So I guess that communication, as Jessica yeah. mentioned, and is key to a good crew resource management style. You know, mm-hmm. communication is key, and setting the tone. For that, Stacy, as you went up through the ranks, mm-hmm. and I know that you've opened many, many, many doors to get to where you are at today. What kind of challenges did you see as you were pursuing and climbing up the ladder? I mean, to be a three-star, that is amazing, and I commend you and. It's amazing that you're there. So
you know, my entire career, once again, I devoted it to the Tuskegee Airmen. Okay, so it was definitely outside of myself the reason why I was serving. I wanted to serve their legacy, and then I wanted to serve the Airmen. And I've had a lot of different roles, you know, in my career, and I had a Pentagon tour early in my career, and when I came back to flying, my wing commander said, "Hey, what would you like to do next?" And I said, "You know what? I would like the opportunity to lead a squadron." And I said, and I don't care what kind of squadron it is. I had done ALSI, which is where you take teams out, you take maintainers and aerial porters out. I said, because I never imagined that I would ever have a flying squadron, I said, I can be an aerial port squadron commander, I can be a civil engineering squadron commander, because that's how I actually started my career. And when they gave me the flying squadron, it was pretty overwhelming, you know? And so that's why I'm wearing this patch today, the 729th Airlift Squadron. But I knew that as long as you take care of the airmen, number one, they will take care of the mission, and then other additional opportunities to lead occurred through vice wing command and then wing commander and then, you know, overseas joint tour with AFRICOM and then, of course, on the staff at Air Mobility Command. And then I really thought at that point I'm now a one-star and I'm thinking, well, you know, I'm grateful. Number one, I am grateful. And then when General Jackson at the time called me up, and I was actually moving. I was moving all my household goods to California. And he says, "Hey, Stacy, what are you doing?" I go, "Oh, I'm moving all my household goods to California. I'm finally walking the talk and getting back to California." And he says, "Hey, you know, I kind of wanted you to be the numbered Air Force commander out at Dobbins Air Reserve Base in Georgia." And
wow.
So he says, "So what do you think?" And I said, I think I need to talk to the movers and see if they can stop this move. But they couldn't, so all my household goods went to California, and I eventually got them back. And so...